Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Well, after a year of bruising double-digit medical aid hikes, there's finally a bit of breathing room for South African households. According to new data from Alex Forbes, contribution increases for 2026 are generally lower across the board, with most of the big open schemes coming in below 10%. It certainly is a welcome change after last year's sharp adjustments, which were driven by deferred pricing from the COVID years and a host of other factors. But before we celebrate too soon, it is worth asking whether this is genuine relief or just a pause before the next round of pressure. To unpack the numbers, I'm joined by Paresh Prima, Head of Health Actuarial Services at Alex Forbes, someone who lives and breathes the data. Paresh, welcome back. Let's just start there. After the pain of 2024, this moderation certainly feels almost like a sigh of relief. What's driving these lower increases this year, and is the industry finally finding its equilibrium again?
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me on the show. I think there are multiple factors. As you mentioned, the catch-up from the post-COVID years, we've seen that being implemented over the past few years. But also, as we know, increases also have a function of CPI. And we see with CPI coming in at lower levels, that allows schemes to price in below the double-digit increase. So that's what we're seeing coming through.
You note that Discovery's effective annual increase of 5.4% is the lowest among the top five, while Sizwe HOSMED's 19% hike certainly stands out at the other end of the spectrum. What explains such a wide divergence between the schemes? And what does Sizwe HOSMED's case tell us about the risks of under-reserving and the importance of scheme solvency?
Yes, so I think that's quite an important question. Each individual scheme needs to look at its own circumstances in determining prices every year. And when you're in a fortunate position of having a little bit of excess reserves like Discovery has, it can delay some of those increases coming through to members, reducing the average increase. And for schemes like in our CISO example, where over a number of years there's been maybe underpricing or maybe bad claims experience, and the schemes haven't had time to catch up, this is a corrective action before, you know, the scheme dips below even the 5.6% that we've seen, which is sort of a important metric at this point when we're considering increases into 2026.
Yeah, and that's why you as a member, you've often got to look at the solvency of your scheme when you're not seeing big increases from one year to the next, because you might then be hit with one of these events. When you look at the aging dilemma in South African medical schemes, I mean, community rating is meant to ensure fairness, but it also relies on younger, healthier members staying in the pool. It's the way the insurance industry works. Are we seeing worrying signs of younger members opting out? And what are you seeing in the data when it comes to the kind of aging pyramid of South African medical schemes?
So I don't think it's necessarily an opting out. It's just more not joining when they should be joining. So when we find, we have this twin peak graph of how many people are in different age bands, and we find after sort of the 20-year age band, the number of members drop, probably due to them falling off their parents' medical scheme, joining employment and not necessarily joining a medical scheme at that point. That sort of over time resulted in the aging of the industry. It's not necessarily an immediate threat, but you know, as time goes by, we see the impacts of it coming through in maybe the increases in contributions being a couple of percentage points higher. And that's why we're seeing medical schemes trying to bring in options that are attractive, not only in terms of the benefit offering, but also the price points to attract some of those younger lives onto those schemes.
And you mentioned that we've seen the introduction of targeted plans, Discovery's Active Smart, we've got Bonitas's Boncore. Do you see these genuinely attracting the younger first-time entrance schemes need, or are members mainly buying down because of affordability pressure? Is it too early to tell?
Well, I think when we looked at the Discovery recent launch, they said it's the fastest growing option. The Active Smart is the fastest growing option they've seen in a number of years. Mm. You know, when you measure, they do measure buy-ups and buy-downs, and that has not really dramatically changed over the year. But they're seeing new entrants coming through. And more schemes are going to have to find an approach to bring them on, because you can't take existing options and reduce contributions drastically to become attractive, because that will make schemes unsustainable.
You've got to deal with the reality that you dealt with, and you've noted dramatic uptake in gap cover and low-cost primary care products. And we've spoken about this before, Paresh, the fact that the medical schemes are hamstrung. They can't offer or compete with the insurance-style products until the least cost benefit option regulations are gazetted, and we don't have that. What are you seeing in terms of movement there, and what are the regulatory implications of this observation that we're seeing in the market?
So I think there was hesitancy in the beginning because of the exemption approach to allowing these products to operate. And in any environment, you know, regulating by exemption is not a permanent feature. It's usually a stopgap for a certain period of time. And we saw that a lot of clients, especially large corporates, hesitant taking or offering those options to their members. But now we're seeing that we've almost normalized the exemption process, and we're seeing a lot more employers offering the choice, especially those employees that it's not compulsory to be on a medical scheme based on their take-home pay, but these would offer, you know, a starting point for those employers to offer that, and then gap cover comes in and fills in the gap for those that are on medical schemes. So we're seeing that that's sort of coming more to the fore, and especially since affordability is always a concern in, you know, the large corporate environments.
Yeah. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, the NHI. How might the phasing out of medical tax credits and restrictions on what schemes can cover reshape the private healthcare industry over the next few years? And what are your thoughts on that? I see the Hospital Association is up in arms, saying it could threaten just under 700,000 members.
Yes, I think when we talk about affordability, and the Department of Health says we're going to only target those people earning over 750,000 rands, but eventually, as it rolls out, and they sort of, you know, increasing the or decreasing the timeline as to when that happens, more and more people that actually rely on these credits to make medical schemes affordable will lapse membership because they can't afford it anymore. So you're not necessarily affecting the high-income people. You're actually affecting the lower-income, possibly the younger profile of members that you want to be on as members of medical schemes. So it's not a easy approach to just remove something over time. Mm-hmm. There is obviously a difference between what the department says in terms of implementation and what we're hearing from them saying in the next year, we're going to start this process. What is also confusing the whole matter is there's still quite a long legal road ahead with the challenges on NHI.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Because of these mounting legal challenges, what should scheme members realistically expect in the short to medium term? Will their benefits or contributions change before there's legal clarity?
No, I think there's a lot of speculation around how long the legal challenges are going to take. And the purpose of the challenge is to clarify the requirements of NHI. We've seen the minister recently trying to consolidate them so that they can expedite the process, but I don't think it's going to be done overnight. It's going to take some time. And until that happens, medical schemes will still be around. Members still need to maintain their membership. And I think if you realize it's not a grudge purchase anymore, it's a must have in these times.
Absolutely. I mean, the last thing you want to do is either end up in a hospital where a million rand bill in a private hospital wipes you out, but you can at least afford that, or have to go to a state-run hospital and risk your life, which is, you know, the sad reality. Just lastly, Paresh, Alex Forbes has long warned that big hikes aren't sustainable long-term. When you look at the schemes generally, do you think across the board they've now built enough reserves and pricing discipline to keep future increases within the CMS's CPI plus range?
I think there will be many that do that. And, you know, with the recent advancements of preventative screening, I think schemes are focusing on things that will bring down downstream costs, which I think is important in keeping increases sustainable. Previously, the focus was keeping contributions low, negotiating with providers as a means to reduce the cost, but they're focusing on more targeted efforts to deal with better health outcomes for members and not just paying for claims. And they've realized that that would bring about better sustainability in their schemes.
What's that old axiom? Prevention is better than cure.
I mean,
exactly. Paresh Prima, thank you very much, Head of Health Actuarial Services at Alex Forbes, for joining us on Classic Business and for helping us just demystify a little bit the numbers behind our medical aid contributions.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.